Good morning. I'm Jeff Robinson, in for Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. California's voter-approved ban on same-sex marriage could be on its way to the U.S. Supreme Court. Just this week, gay marriage foes petitioned the high court to overturn a federal appeals court ruling that upheld Judge Vaughn Walker's decision to strike down Proposition 8, and it's that landmark decision that's the subject of the play we're discussing today. This Saturday and Sunday, Plan B Theater Company is bringing the play 8, written by Oscar-winning screenwriter Dustin Lance Black, to Salt Lake City, dramatizing the court proceedings that led to Proposition 8 being struck down. It will feature a post-show discussion at the Rose Wagner with Black and Congressman Barney Frank as well. Joining us on the air now to talk about it is Jerry Rapier, producing director for Plan B Theater Company. And Jerry, it's good to see you.
Thanks.
And we're also glad to have actor Matthew Ivan Bennett, who plays Jeff, one of the plaintiffs in the case. Matt, good to talk to you too.
Thanks for having me.
And we also have Brandy Balkin, executive director of Equality Utah, who will moderate the discussion after the performances this weekend. And Brandy, thanks for being here.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Listeners, join us on the air with your questions and comments about the Play 8 and Proposition 8 and the future of LGBT rights in Utah and across the nation. We're at 801-355-TALK. That's 801-355-8255. Well, Jerry, this play premiered on Broadway last year. It was then performed in Los Angeles in March and broadcast worldwide on YouTube. Tell me about how Dustin Lance Black put this show together from the actual court proceedings.
Well, Lance was actually in attendance at the trial that is dramatized in the play. Mm-hmm. And he and Rory O'Malley, who people may recognize his name as a cast member and a Tony nominee for The Book of Mormon on Broadway, mm-hmm. Rory was also in attendance. And Rory is connected to an organization called Broadway Impact. And he and Lance began talking that Broadway Impact was looking for a play to circulate nationwide to make available to theaters across the country to help educate people about LGBT rights. And Lance, from that conversation and their shared experience observing the trials, created this play for that purpose. So the first reading was the Broadway reading in September and mm-hmm. of last year. And by May of 2013, there will be over 200 readings performed nationwide and a couple in Australia and New Zealand.
And so, Jerry, give us a broad overview of this play and what people actually see on stage during 8.
Well, in June of 2010, the actual case that is dramatized in the play mm-hmm. was to determine the constitutionality of Proposition 8. And, of course, the end result of that ruling was that Judge Vaughn Walker ruled that Prop 8 was unconstitutional. Mm-hmm. That decision was actually made on August 4th, 2010. So our event this weekend is 2 years to the day wow. of that decision, which is very exciting for us, too. And we're actually living history because the request for a retrial from the proponents of Prop 8 was just denied in June of this year. And the decision, that team's decision to push forward and request to be seen and heard by the U.S. Supreme Court just happened in the last week. So living newspaper very much is what mm-hmm. we are. We're experiencing it in real time. And what's really interesting to me, just as an observer, both sides of this case are now pushing toward the Supreme Court, and that seems rather unique to me. The other thing that's really exciting about the case is that the American Foundation for Equal Rights, which is the sponsor of Perry v. Schwarzenegger, which is mm-hmm. now Perry v. Brown, that is the center of the play and the case, Ted Olson and David Boies are the lead counsel, and most people would recognize them as opposing counsel on Bush v. Gore.
Right.
So they're arguably the highest profile attorneys in the country who are pushing forward in the name of marriage equality.
This is City Views on KCPW. We're talking about 8, the play by Dustin Lance Black. Plan B Theater Company is bringing it to Salt Lake City this weekend. And let's actually play a quick clip from the production in Los Angeles. You'll recognize the voices of well-known actors like Martin Sheen and Jamie Lee Curtis.
Now, today, you are in a committed relationship with another gay man, correct?
I have found someone that I know I can dedicate the rest of my life to. And when you find someone who is not only your best friend, but your best advocate and supporter in life, it's a natural next step for me to want to marry that person.
March will be 9 years.
Sandy and I live together in Berkeley with our children.
We each bring 2 biological children to our family and each other, our 2 younger sons.
in high school.
I remember the first time I met Sandy thinking she was maybe the sparkliest person I ever met. And our friendship became deeper and deeper over time, and then after a few years, I began to feel that I might be falling in love with her.
That's a clip from 8, performed in Los Angeles. You can view that entire production online on YouTube. And Matt Bennett, you play Jeffrey, one of the plaintiffs in the Proposition 8 case. Tell us a little bit about your character and the real-life person behind the character.
Well, Jeffrey Zurillo is a person, as you learned from that clip, who's been in a relationship with a man for 9 years, Paul Katami. Very sort of average guy. Who is not content to have only a civil union, because he feels that, as he says in the trial and in the script, it would relegate him to a level of second class citizenship. One of my favorite lines in the play is by the witness Dr. Meyer, where he says, "You know, it's quite clear that nobody aspires to be a domestic partner," and I think Jeffrey and Paul chose to be a part of the trial because of exactly that. They don't want to be domestic partners. They want the full meaning of marriage.
Mm-hmm. And you actually have a line there from the script, if you would read that for us, about talking about civil unions and marriage.
Sure. He says, "A civil union? A domestic partnership would relegate me to a level of second-class citizenship, maybe even third-class citizenship. It doesn't give due respect to the relationship that we have had for almost 9 years. Only a marriage could do that."
And Matt, when you're doing a play where the dialogue comes from, you know, real-life court transcripts, obviously very different from doing a period piece, does that make it more difficult for you as an actor?
Well, at the end of the day, all you can really do is stand there and say your line like you mean it, you know? So the broad answer is no, there's no difference. But I certainly did check out Jeffrey Zurillo's presence on the internet and was able to watch some video clips online. There's a great one on the AFER.org website. And that definitely informed my performance.
This is City Views on KCBW. We're talking about 8, the play by Dustin Lance Black. Join us on the air at 801-355-TALK, 801-355-8255. Or you can send an email to cityviews@kcbw.org. Our guests are Jerry Rapier, producing director of Plan B Theater Company, Brandy Balkin, executive director of Equality Utah, and Matt Bennett, one of the actors in this weekend's performance. And Jerry, by the way, the production is sold out for this weekend. Is that right?
It is sold out. So I appreciate you mentioning the YouTube option. We are at capacity. We may be the only way people may be able to get a ticket is we do have a wait list an hour before each show. So at 7 o'clock on Saturday night or 1 o'clock on Sunday, people could visit the box office and see if anything has been turned back for repurchase. But otherwise, you can see the very starry LA production in its entirety on YouTube.
Why do you think there was so much demand for people to snap up all the tickets here in Utah so quickly?
Well, I think that there's a lot of interest in personal connection that people feel to this entire issue here. I personally, the reason that I wanted to move forward with this is my partner, now husband, and I were married last July in New York, and the whole thing takes on a different meaning for me. I wasn't really prepared, and I've talked to other people since then who have a similar feeling. We were together 15 and a half years when we got married. I thought this was just going to be this thing we did, right? But it feels completely different, and you can't really explain that unless you've been through it. And truthfully, everyone should have that opportunity to feel what we've felt. Exquisite joy. There's something completing about it. And I think in a culture that emphasizes family and relationships and the long view of what those things mean, there's a greater investment in ensuring that people, no matter who you are or who you love, have access to those feelings.
And declaring your commitment publicly changes the commitment level, for sure.
Yeah.
And it's hard to get divorced.
That's true.
Brandi Bulkin with Equality Utah, what was your reaction when you learned that this show would be coming to Salt Lake City, and why do you think it is important that it is coming here to Utah?
You know, I think it's important for this play to be seen actually across the country, and it's a really good question, Jeff. For me, one of the key components and probably some of the highest pieces of importance with regards to viewing this production, and if you can't view it live, obviously seeing it online, is that I really think it draws out the human components. I think one of the reasons that this trial was closed to the public was that the information, I think there was some suspicion that the information was going to be very, very compelling. And I think what it does at its core, I think the key component of this play is peeling back the facade or the characteristics or the definers of these litigants and showing them as real human beings. And I think that that's where our best work is done as a community. And I think that for people in Utah, look, Utah is a state that has not only a ban on marriage equality, it also has a ban on the formation of civil unions,
right,
or any contractual agreement that is substantially equivalent to that of marriage. But I think it's so important for us to begin as community members to see each other in our full human value and to learn to respect each other and our roles in this community. I'm born and raised here in Utah. I feel like I have a good sense of who Utahns are, and I believe that by viewing this play or materials like this, it gains us an opportunity to understand people that we perceive as very different, that we perceive as maybe not like us. And I think that that's really what we're here to do, is to really learn to understand each other and understand those that we perceive as impossibly different.
And Brandi, give us an update on the status of Proposition 8. What's happened in the court so far, and what could potentially happen in the coming months or years?
So the Supreme Court has until September 10th to agree to hear this case, the Perry case specifically. But there are two other cases that are currently being proposed to the Supreme Court that deal with marriage equality, one being specifically about DOMA and its relation to the federal government. And there's a third case that's actually coming out of Nevada. And look, I can't tell you what the Supreme Court's going to decide to do. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone in this room could. It's certainly just speculation. The general legal chatter at this point is saying the Supreme Court will take up at least one of these cases. They may conflate the three cases and hear all three during one trial period, or they may choose to take on the DOMA case, which would specifically look at the federal government's role in mitigating marriage. Again, I can't speak exactly to what that's going to look like, and we don't know if they do pick up this trial, the Prop 8 trial or the Perry trial, if they're ruling will be narrowly defined, which is just to apply to California, or if they will more broadly define that ruling, and it will have implications for states across the country. So it's a great question, and I wish I could give you a little bit more factual information in a response, but at this juncture, we really don't know which cases they're going to take up, and we don't know how narrowly they're going to construe the cases.
And as you mentioned, we certainly don't know how the Supreme Court will rule, but right now, with such a split between the justices that people see as conservative versus liberal, if they were to take it up and rule in favor of Proposition 8 and it became this broad ruling, is there fear in the gay community that if the Supreme Court takes up this issue now, it could actually go the opposite direction and in fact be a huge setback in terms of legal precedent for gay rights?
It's a fantastic question. You know, I think that at this juncture, there are many in the LGBT community who are really invested in that continuation of conversation. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that we've seen over the last 10 to 15 years is really a very rapid change in perceptions about lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people. And I think predominantly that's because there has been a very visible conversation about people like me. And I think what makes a difference in changing perceptions is really having the information and having the actual the vocabulary to talk about these issues and to understand these issues. And we really didn't have that culturally 15, 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. So I think at its core, it's incredibly important for these conversations to continue. Although I think you bring up a very good point. I think having a Supreme Court ruling that denied marriage equality for all Americans could be a legal setback. But I will say, for working in this movement, that I don't think that would be the end of the conversation.
This is City Views on KCBW. We are talking about Proposition 8. Plan B Theater Company is bringing 8, the play by Oscar-winning screenwriter Dustin Lance Black, to Salt Lake City this weekend, Saturday and Sunday at the Rose Wagner. Join us on the air with your questions and comments about the play and about Proposition 8. We're at 801-355-TALK, 801-355-8255. We have to take a short break. This is City Views here on KCBW. Welcome back. This is City Views here on NPR Utah, KCPW. I'm Jeff Robinson, in for Jennifer Napier Pierce. We're talking this hour about 8. It's the play about the overturning of Proposition 8 in federal court in California. Plan B Theater Company is bringing it to Salt Lake City this weekend. My guests are Jerry Rapier, producing director for Plan B Theater Company, Brandy Balkin, executive director of Equality Utah, and Matthew Ivan Bennett, who is an actor in this weekend's production. Join us on the air with your questions and comments at 801-355-8255. That's 801-355-TALK. And I want to start this segment by playing another clip of 8, the production in Los Angeles, which you can find on YouTube. This features actors Kevin Bacon and John C. Reilly defending Proposition 8 in court.
Mr. Blankenhorn, what is the primary purpose of marriage in human groups?
We're embodied as male and female. That's the basic division in the species. We reproduce sexually. In fact, the famous anthropologist Claude Levi Strauss once described marriage as a social institution with a biological foundation. He was saying that across societies, that the man and the woman whose sexual union makes the child, that those same two individuals are also the social and legal parents of the child. And there is only one institution in the world that performs the task of bringing together the three dimensions of parenthood, the biological, the social, and the legal. That institution is marriage.
So Jerry Rapier, I noticed as Matt is chuckling now, when I was watching this on YouTube, there are a lot of people laughing at John C. Reilly's performance. Maybe it was just his appearance, I don't know. But do you think this play does a fair job in portraying the pro-Proposition 8 people?
Well, I think going back to what Brandy was saying about the public being excluded from viewing this trial, what was really interesting is Judge Walker agreed with Ted Olson and David Boies that it should be broadcast. The opposition was successful. Charles Cooper, their lead counsel, was successful in getting media cameras banned from the courtroom. So that's why the coverage of this, if you recall, was very old school with sketches from sketch artists and such. And I totally agree with Brandy, and it's documented in the play that really bias was the basis of that. The truth is, the proponents of Prop 8, Charles Cooper's case was weak. It depended on one witness, and that's who John C. Reilly is playing, David Blankenhorn, who last month also, in a huge shift, switched teams, not with sexual orientation. Maybe I should be very clear about that. But he recanted his position in support of Prop 8 and has made an official announcement through the American Foundation for Equal Rights that he now supports marriage equality. He has some qualms with some certain things, but he understands the opposition based on law and what's best for human relationships is unfounded. Which is really, I think, why people are reacting in the way they are, because what you're seeing and why there's so much laughter, there's a lot of laughter in the play. We are seeing now how the case unraveled in court, which it really did. Judge Walker's 186-page decision repeatedly, in many ways, emphasizes how unconstitutional their stance is, that looking at the case as a piece of law, it just doesn't stand up. And Blankenhorn is the personification of that in the case.
And talking about 8 as a play, Jerry, this is, you know, quite different from perhaps your typical play experience. It's a show where the, you know, actors are reading their scripts, obviously a very, you know, lots of dialogue that you would have to memorize in a short period of time. And it dramatizes courtroom proceedings. There's real life dialogue. Does it hold up, do you think, as a piece of entertainment as well, or is there even an entertainment component to this at all?
Oh, certainly. And this is something that we've been doing script and hand reading since 2003. Mm-hmm. It's It's just something that we do as a company. And this is the third summer in a row that we've done something large scale like this. Two years ago, we did the Normal Heart. This last summer, we did a dollhouse. And now this. I think what's really fascinating is that from a performance perspective, it forces the actors to really trust their instincts and run with first impulse. And the audience feels that. Like, there's this energetic symbiotic relationship between the artists on stage and the audience in their seats that we're all kind of watching this unfold together. And it's really remarkable, the energy that can come from that. And it's very unique to a reading. And the most common comment I get from people who attend our readings is they forget that the actors are carrying scripts. You're seeing the best of the best of Salt Lake actors. 20 actors take the stage, and I guarantee you'll forget. Well, I should say those of you who already have tickets will forget that they're carrying scripts. But there's something very specific about what Lance wants with the play and what Broadway Impact and the American Foundation for Equal Rights hope to accomplish with this. They want some community involvement, so they don't want to limit it to professional actors. So there's a dictum that it is performed as a reading. So all 200 plus productions are staged readings. So, for example, he does have a theater background, but we do have a non-theater person involved in our production. Reed Cowan, who made the film Eight, The Mormon Proposition, will be reading the role of Evan Wolfson, who is the executive director of Freedom to Marry. Reed is a TV anchor. And he'll be joining us on stage in a little different world for him.
And Matt Bennett, as an actor, how much rehearsal time do you have, and what do you do between now and Saturday to prepare for this part?
Oh, just run, and run. we're just getting familiar with the overall physical shape of the play.
Do I see some marathon rehearsal sessions over the next couple of days?
Well, our first rehearsal was last night, actually. Generally, we rehearse for 5 days with these types of events. And but the cast of 20 has had their scripts for months, actually. So it pretty much it comes together much faster than it sounds like it would. Again, because in our particular situation, these are all actors who work well with and respect each other's work. So it's pretty remarkable how quickly things can take shape. And Matt was in the Normal Heart reading too, so he's got this down.
Right.
Listeners, join us on the air at 801-355-TALK, 801-355-8255. Anne from Salt Lake City is calling in with a question. Hi, Anne, you're on the air.
Hi. I have a question, I guess, for Brandy. She mentioned earlier that she thinks a show like this can help let other people know about groups that they might not know about. And I wonder, in a place like Salt Lake, where we have such a thriving gay population, but then we also have a very vocal opposition to a lot of the things that this play is pushing for, if a show like this is really just preaching to the choir, or if it's actually reaching people who would want to hear the alternative. And I'll take my question off here.
Okay. Thank you, Anne. Appreciate it.
So, Anne, that's a fantastic question. And I think that there are a few things that are important to point up. I think the first would be that groups like Equality Utah, the organization that I work for, work consistently on finding commonality between all members of our community. And there are so many things that we have agreement on in this state. I think that when you look at our community as the schism between LDS and LGBT, it's not a fair portrayal of our community, not just in Salt Lake City, but in Utah as a whole. And I think that is demonstrated perhaps in no better way than the recent Pride Festival parade, where we had over 300 LDS people stepping behind Dustin Lance Black and Troy Williams, who were leading the parade, to demonstrate their support for the LGBT community, not specifically from a policy perspective, but from a humanity perspective. And I think that with regards to the question of, is this just speaking to the choir or preaching to the choir, I think realistically, we all need gathering spaces. And I can imagine that there will be not few people who come who maybe are curious about this, who maybe haven't made up their decision, who maybe aren't familiar with what this trial looked like. That's one thing that I think is critically important about this play and about this conversation, Jeff, so I appreciate you having us here today. I think that there's been a lot of rhetoric around the issue of marriage equality and around LGBT people as a whole. And I think that through venues like this, we have the opportunity to clear up some of the misconceptions and some of the things that have been portrayed in a way that is less than factual. And it gives us an opportunity to have a safe place to have conversation.
And Brandy, you'll be moderating the discussion after the show between playwright and screenwriter Dustin Lance Black and Congressman Barney Frank.
Yes.
Do you think it's important to bring up in that discussion, to discuss more in depth, Utah's role and the church's role in passing Proposition 8?
Actually, I think in that discussion, I'm more interested in talking about Congressman Frank's recent, his decision not to continue to serve as a congressman, his recent marriage to his partner of many, many years, and where he sees things going. You know, he had a quote in the Salt Lake Tribune saying, "I could do another fundraiser in Manhattan, but I'd rather be here where I can make a difference." Mm. And I'm actually very intrigued to hear what Congressman Frank thinks that looks like. You know, Utah is not unique in its cultural sensitivities and in its population. We're very similar to 29 other states across the country. So I think that that's what I'd like to see teased out, right?
Do you think then that focusing on the past then is something that should not be done, that we should kind of forget that the church was so involved in helping pass it?
I don't think we can ever forget our past. I think that it would be a huge mistake, and I think it would be an act of disrespect in so many ways to the real people whose real stories were impacted by the passage of Proposition 8. I don't think we serve ourselves when we buy into black and white thinking, which is to say, if one person made one decision at one time, that is a decision that they will always have, and that is a conversation that they will always be able to engage in. I think that none of us are served when we don't leave room for evolution, when we don't leave room for growing understanding, and when we don't create safe spaces for conversation.
And Jerry, Plan B Theater Company, I believe in the past, has put up shows that are related to the LDS religion and LDS culture, if I'm not mistaken. Do you think it's important to discuss the church's role in passing Proposition 8?
Well, yes, we do have that history. And what we try and do is work from the center out instead of from one far side or the other. And I think it's important in this particular case to emphasize that 8 has nothing to do with the LDS Church in any way. Hmm. It's focused on the legal proceedings and the trial itself. And of course, here there was a great amount of angst and fervor surrounding the LDS Church's role in fundraising to support Proposition 8. But that had no place in the courtroom itself. The LDS Church isn't mentioned. It has nothing to do with the lives or the positions depicted in the play. This is simply focused on the legality, the constitutional question, and really kind of connecting back to what Anne's question was, really the value of something like this, I think, and dovetailing off of Brandy's comment, is that we go from rhetoric and ideas and talking points and points of view to human experience. And what we're seeing and what Lance has done so beautifully in the play is give us Jeff and Paul and Sandy and Chris and their kids. And they're just families, like any other family. Yeah. They've come together in a different way, but their goals, their hopes, their dreams, and their sensitivities are just like anyone else. And I think, honestly, in a culture that is so focused on family, that's the connective tissue. That's the common ground.
This is City Views on KCPW. We're talking about 8, the play. Plan B Theater Company is bringing it to Salt Lake City this Saturday and Sunday at the Rose Wagner. Join us on the air at 801-355-TALK. That's 801-355-8255. Brandy, Equality Utah has been very involved, of course, in LGBT rights in the state when it comes to the city level, the state level. What are the most significant milestones we've seen in Utah in recent years?
You know, I would say since 2010, we've seen some pretty fantastic adoptions of good policy when it comes to gay and transgender folks. In 15 cities and counties, they have actually adopted non-discrimination ordinances that prevent discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity in the workplace or in housing. And, you know, one component that I think is important to mention with regards to the ability for people to engage in meaningful conversation and create common ground in our belief set is that the first ordinance that was passed actually had a public endorsement by the LDS Church, mm-hmm. and that was no small thing, I think, for the people of the state of Utah in opening doors to conversation. We were also able to achieve in two school districts enumerated and inclusive protections for students against bullying and harassment, as well as equitable protections for all employees of school districts, which again is no small thing. We were able to amend our bullying and hazing law at the state level to include cyberbullying and verbal harassment. And as most of us know who have kids in school, you know, bullying today doesn't look like it did when I was a kid. Bullying today looks like some really vitriolic and hateful Facebook posts or text messages. And that's a big deal because kids can't get away from it. You know, I could get away from school when I was in junior high. I would go home and have a safe space. And our kids today are so constantly plugged in that cyberbullying is really, it has a profound impact on our kids' lives. So achieving that policy change at the state level was nothing short of extraordinary, I think, for all of our kids, not just gay and transgender kids. And as we continue to move forward, we were able to get support of the Salt Lake Chamber of Commerce with regards to our non-discrimination bill at the state level. We were able to achieve bipartisan support, and we were really able to achieve an immense amount of support from the population of Utah. 73% of Utahns think that discrimination is wrong. And candidly, Jeff, that's no surprise, right? These are our common values. Discrimination is not, it's not a Utah value. And I think another point to note is that most recently a study came out of BYU stating that over 71% of Utahns believe there should be some form of relationship recognition for LGB families. And I think if you had put, if you had said 5 years ago that that study was going to come out of BYU, people wouldn't have believed it. But that's where we are today in Utah.
Now, the non-discrimination bill has gotten, I believe, two or three hearings in a committee up at the Utah legislature. Brandy, when you're lobbying for such protections and lawmakers, many of them present misconceptions about the community and really basically shut down the bill and sometimes even don't even want to talk about it. How do you deal with, you know, avoiding getting fed up with the whole thing?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, I have to say at my very core, I'm an optimist by nature. And I believe it's a Martin Luther King Jr. quote, "The arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice." And I profoundly believe that. I wake up every morning believing that. And I believe that a conversation that might not be possible today very, very well may be possible tomorrow. And not only is it my responsibility as the executive director of Equality Utah, it's my privilege to be able to have those conversations and to be able to work with my community members and my peers to build understanding and to do much as the play does, to open the doors, to peel back the characterizations and the stereotypes so that we can see each other.
This is City Views here on KCPW. We're talking about 8, the play by Dustin Lance Black and Plan B Theater Company's production this weekend here in Salt Lake City. Our time is short, but you can still join us on the air at 801-355-8255. I want to play another clip here. This is actually from a conversation I had with Dustin Lance Black not too long after he won the Oscar for writing the screenplay for Melk, the biopic about Harvey Milk. Let's play a quick excerpt from our conversation there. Dustin, when you gave your Academy Award acceptance speech last year, you said you believed that the LGBT community would very soon have equal rights on the federal level. Do you still think that's the case?
Oh, yeah, I know that's the case. I mean, we've already made some gains and since that time, since that speech, with federal protections. The Matthew Shepard bill passed and was signed. So we're starting to, you know, make our federal arguments. And I think people are responding and listening. And of course, you know, I'm involved with the federal case against Proposition 8 in California. And I do. I think it's important to make those arguments so that people understand that we do see ourselves as fully equal. And not just equal in one area over another, but fully equal on a federal level.
Jerry Rapier, do you share Dustin Lance Black's optimism?
Yes, I do. I think it will happen in my lifetime. It could happen by the end of this year. I think that basically people are good. And regarding the statement you made earlier about the makeup of the Supreme Court, I shared that concern until the vote on Obamacare, quite frankly. And what I'm reminded over and over again is partisanship does get set aside in certain instances when the Supreme Court rules because the law is the thing. And generally, people vote their conscience. And we saw some hopping both directions in that decision, and that actually gave me hope, people voting against what people would have expected them to, justices voting from their own point of view, which we can't assume because they're registered with one party or another that we really know what they think until they tell us what they think, until the evidence is before them. And truthfully, there is no compelling evidence that supports Proposition 8. It just doesn't exist. And it's just a matter of it being heard.
Yeah, I think people are basically good too. But I think even more than that, it's difficult to avoid rationality in a court of law. A court system is designed to eliminate bias by hearing both sides of an argument and basing its decisions on evidence. And what the Play 8 shows, I think, beyond it being a great emotional vehicle, is that there are compelling, deep intellectual arguments for not accepting anti-gay rhetoric anymore. And so that's my point.
Brandi Bulkin with Equality Utah, in September at your Allies dinner, you will be honoring former Utah Governor John Huntsman and his wife, Mary Kay Huntsman. Tell me about that honor that you're bestowing upon them and the significance of it.
Yes. So thank you for featuring the Allies dinner September 27th. Every year we present community members with Allies for Equality Awards, and we're actually presenting awards this year to Trevor Southey, to Ann and, Teresa Novak and Ann Spatola, and PFLAG Utah, as well as Governor and Mary Kay Huntsman. And we chose these folks because they represent, I think, the ability to change attitudes, the ability to engage in those conversations that I've referenced throughout the course of this interview. And I think that Governor Huntsman, when you look at the level that he has participated and the level of visibility that he has, not only as a, and I'm going to use some labels here, as a Republican, as a conservative, as an LDS person, he's also taken some very, very moderate and very, very human positions on not just LGBT equality, but on many things. And I think that because of that, because of his and Mary Kay's willingness to speak to their own internal, deeply held beliefs about fairness and about justice, that it's really, again, created a space for us to continue to have further and further conversations about what that actually means on the ground. What does that mean in a policy sense? And when I look at the other Allies for Equality awards that we're giving this year, I'm really just so excited and honored to be sharing a stage with these people who've really done so much incredible work in our state to better the lives of, again, not just LGBT people, but all Utahns.
And Brandi, I want to close this morning by asking you, Proposition 8, as you know, is referred to by many as Proposition Hate, and we've certainly seen that word used in this recent debate about Chick-fil-A and Chick-fil-A Appreciation Day held here in Utah and across the country yesterday. Do you think that it stifles the debate when you use that word and that it shuts people down, or do you think that that it's a fair word to use in this conversation?
You know, I can't speak for anyone but my own self, and I personally think that we do our best work, again, when we're not relying upon rhetoric and when we're not going to a place of hyperbole. I don't think that our best conversations nor our best understanding are gained when we go to those places. Although I will say that it's a framework that's relied upon not just by LGBT advocates, but by all sides of many, many issues that people see as hot button. I think that it's a part of our culture right now, and that's why I think a lot of talking head commentators are so incredibly popular, and they get such high views because they appeal to that sort of gut reaction. But again, I don't think that we get our best result when we rely upon that kind of rhetoric.
We've been speaking about 8, the play. It's being brought to Salt Lake City at the Rose Wagner this Saturday and Sunday by Plan B Theater Company. Our guests have been Jerry Rapier, producing director of Plan B. Jerry, thanks for your time.
Oh, thank you so much.
Brandi Bulkin, executive director of Equality Utah, thanks for being here.
Thanks for your time.
And Matt Bennett, an actor in this weekend's performance, thanks for your time as well.
I appreciate it.
This is City Views here on NPR Utah, KCPW. We will be right back after another short break.